Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams Podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their new town, big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
It's April 11th, 2021, and it is 7 a.m. here on the West Coast.
And I'm with John Davis. He is in Akron, Ohio. And I would like to introduce John to you. He has lived the life of an action hero. He's been a professional fight director and stuntman for stage and screen, an artistic director of three regional theme parks, a sword fighting comedian, and a motivational speaker, author, and coach. John has been featured on the Today Show and the Discovery Channel. And since 2001, John has brought his inspirational message to 16 countries around the world, including the front lines of both Iraq and Afghanistan, on six USO tours. So everybody prepare to become action heroes, and please welcome John Davis.
Well, hello, everybody. So glad to be here. Really excited to be here with another follically challenged man like you, Luke.
That's awesome. So you're in Akron, Ohio. I think I might have stopped there for gas once or twice.
That's how most people stop come here. That's how most people come to Akron. They stop for gas or tires because we are known as the rubber city, because Goodyear and Firestone started here. And it's got a really great rich history around the rubber families, because if you've ever been to Akron and you had a chance to get off the highways and get into the city, you discover that we have more Tudor mansions than any town in the country, because the Goodyear family was part of the Sieberling family, and the Sieberling family in the early 20s created a giant mansion known as Stan Hewitt. And Stan Hewitt is this amazing complete restoration or a mock-up of a Tudor-era mansion. When you go through it, it's all cut beams and everything. And everybody was like, well, we need to be like the rubber city people. And they started building Tudor mansions everywhere. But how did I get here? This is an interesting thing. I grew up in a beach resort, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, one of my favorite places on earth. There's dolphins in the waves and lighthouses all around, and just a beautiful place to be. And I was married at the time, and my wife ended up leaving and taking my son to Akron, Ohio. And so I uprooted everything in my life, because there's no way in hell I'm going to be away from my son. I hope I can say that word on this show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could say worse.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I'm on a lot of podcasts, and some of them are not as free with the language. So I ended up moving here. I live about 4 miles away from my son and my ex-wife, which she's thrilled about, by the way. Thank you very much. So I've been in Akron ever since. And when I first got here, I was really not liking Akron. And I have come to really love Akron. I found a nice, really nice community here. As someone who's been in theater and fight direction and everything, I work with a lot of local theaters here. I've directed several plays here, and I'm still going out and doing my work elsewhere as well. Most of the time I'm doing my keynote stuff, though. That's what I do now. Nice. Really.
So how long have you been there in Akron?
Let's see. We moved here when Kynan was 2, and so 15 years. Wow. 15 years.
I had a similar story. I was living in the Cayman Islands, and when I split up with my ex, she moved to Edmonton, Canada, which is – I think it's even worse than Akron. But it sounds like Akron turned out to be a nice place.
Yeah.
But, so that's great. So what is – a comedy sword fighter? I've never heard that term before.
most people don't have not heard that term before, but When I was a young man, I wanted to be a stuntman and a fight director, and I ended up going to a Renaissance festival. And I put together a show called Hack and Slash. It was a comedy sword fighting show. That show was the foundation of most of all the work I did in my life, because that show took me into fight direction. It took me into stunt work. It took me into – and I started doing Renaissance festivals all over the world. And for those of you guys who don't know what a Renaissance festival is, basically what that means is I was wearing tights and living in the woods. And other than that, so that when I say that show took me all over the world, September 8th, 2001. Now think about that, September 8th, not September 11th, September 8th. I was stepping off stage at the Maryland Renaissance Festival, and two guys walked up to me and said, "Hey, we're from the Pentagon. Would you like to do USO shows? We've been watching you for years. We love you guys. We think you're funny. We think your sword fights are cool. Would you like to do USO shows?" And we're like, "Yeah, absolutely." September 10th was Monday. We were really excited about this idea. September 10th was Monday. We actually went to there and dropped off our packet on their desk. And September 11th was Tuesday. And, you know, the Pentagon got hit and the towers and what in New York got hit, and they shut down everything. And then they called us 3 weeks later and said, "Can you go immediately?" And we ended up, you know, when the military says immediately, they said, "Let's make sure you have all your passes and your shots and all that stuff." So it takes a little while. We left in November that year, and we went from November to February to all the bases through Europe as they were building up to go into Afghanistan. And then we continued going. And the second time they sent us to Europe again. And the whole time we're in Europe the second time, it was like the soldiers that needed us were not in Europe. And they kept saying, we need you to, you know, entertain these soldiers. But when we get to the bases and the people who were on the bases weren't staying on base for entertainment. They were going out into Europe because they were in Europe. Why would they stay on base for entertainment? And so we kept saying, "Send us further downrange. Send us further downrange." The next tour we went on, I remember this very clearly. I was telling this exact story to a lieutenant colonel while I was standing on the flight line in Fallujah. And I was standing there. I said, "Colonel," I kept telling him to send us further downrange. And I finished the word range, and a quarter mile off to my left, a bomb blew up. Right? And the colonel, without flinching, looks at the bomb. He looks back at me. He says, "Son, you can't get further downrange." And we did. We ended up doing six tours. We did the front lines of Iraq, Afghanistan. We did all 14 other countries, and we saw real stuff. We had RPGs shot at helicopters we were in. It was an amazing experience. But yeah, that comedy sword fighting show was the impetus for it was the jumping off point for everything else I did in my life, pretty much.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Amazing. So that's like what Bob Hope used to do that, right? Used to tour and visit the troops and just give them a little bit of comedy, a little bit of something to take their mind off the action.
And right.
How long would you stay when you would go on one of these tours? In Fallujah, for example.
We would fly in. Well, for most, when we were out in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was very different from Europe. In Europe, you know, there was no real threat per se.
Right.
So when we would fly into a base, I'll give you a really harrowing story. And this is honest to God, true story. During the Iraq war, the Shia attacked the Sunni's mosque or vice versa. I can't remember which one it was, in a town called Samarra. It was all over the news that they attacked this mosque. Well, one of the reasons why it made it all over the news is because right next to Samarra was a U.S. military base. And we flew into that base the week after the mosque was attacked. And we came. Now, we were traveling at that point with it was a total of four of us. It was me and my comedy partner, and then we would bring other comedians along with us. So we wanted to make sure that we gave those soldiers a real show. So we would do like a two and a half hour show for them. And it was like a – because we were based in Renaissance Festival stuff, we had like a – almost like a mini circus with us. Like we would show up and we would do sword fights and bull whips and beds of nails. Like my partner would lay on a bed of nails and I'd break cinder blocks in his chest with a sledgehammer. And we brought another guy who would do ladder walking and all kinds of crazy stuff. And then somebody else was a juggler or you know, fire eater or something like that. We would bring like a really cool, very out of the box show because we wanted them not to just have the singer. You know, we wanted them to have something right. that was really funny and out of the box. And so one of the reasons the USO liked us is because all of our equipment could pack into one helicopter, right? And then we would get in the second helicopter. So here we come into Samarra. We come in, we land, and they run up to unload the first helicopter. We get out of the second helicopter. They come over, they meet us. They say, guys, you're on a base that's we're always at ThreatCon Charlie, which is just below, you know, actual combat happening, which is Delta, right? We're always at ThreatCon Charlie, but we're a base that we don't even have a dining facility, but it is lunchtime and we're going to feed you guys. So go over to that truck, and that in that truck is where you get your food. But once you get your food, scatter, because you don't want to be around a whole group of people because that becomes a target for the locals, right? Wow. So we come out of there and we find a Humvee. We climb up in the Humvee, and we're eating lunch. We finish our lunch. We go off. We do two and a half hour show. It's really fun, really successful show. Get out of our crazy costumes, pack all our stuff up. We go back out. The two helicopters come back because the helicopters don't stay on the ground because they're targets if they're on the ground. Mm-hmm. They throw all our stuff in the front helicopter. We climb in the back helicopter. The two helicopters tilt to take off. Rocket-propelled grenade goes under the helicopter I'm sitting in and blows up the Humvee I had lunch in.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was an amazing, you know, I mean, of course, we were now the only, what the Marines would call the birds. We were the only birds in the air. And so we actually went hunting to find these guys. We never actually did find them, but it was very interesting being in a helicopter doing circular sweeps on a city looking for someone who just shot at us. It was.
Wow. So this helicopter is armed. Like it's a full
military
helicopter and you're trying to. Retaliate.
And when you get in the helicopter, you know, one of us would always get a chance to have the headphones on to listen to what the pilots were saying. Mm-hmm. And on the when we got on that flight originally, it was a new captain and with a new crew. And the captain gets in, the pilot, he gets in and he says, who do we have on board today? And they all introduce themselves to each other. And then we introduce ourselves. And then he says, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know something today. He says, we are fully operational, and that means that if the enemy does engage us, we will engage the enemy, and we will defeat the enemy. Let's move on. Let's move out. And I was like, okay. And we, you know, whether we were on the chopper or not, we were going to be in the war, you know.
Jeez. How did you feel going through that? That must have been pretty crazy.
Hugely exhilarating. But I had an experience early in my life that changed my perspective on fear in a huge way. And having that experience early in my life was what let me go on to achieve everything I ever did in my life. So because it was the one thing that showed me how limitless I truly am and how limitless everyone truly is.
Mm-hmm. Can How's you tell us this story?
How's that for a teaser?
Yeah, that's a great time. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I would love to hear that story. So and before I ask you that story, though, were any of the guys with you on those helicopters freaking out?
Oh,
like,
no,
actually. Get me the hell off of here.
You know what's really interesting? They not at all. We were all like, yeah, let's get them. Right? They just shot at us. You know, what the heck? We all were. It was so exhilarating. And quite honestly, it happened too fast to have that kind of response.
I see.
You know, it happened just, it was like this is happening. We're in it. What are we doing? You know, let's go do it. It was very different experience. I mean, until you're out there and you've had the experience, you really can't describe it. But when you're out there and you're in it, it's like, yeah, no, we're just doing it. And there's everything else gets turned off. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So tell us about this experience when you were younger that prepared you for that.
So as I said earlier, I wanted to be a stuntman and a fight director. And I went to the Renaissance Festival. I met two gentlemen who were two of the top fight directors in the country. I was very excited to work with them. And, you know, I was a very strong, very fit man. I was going for my black belt in Taekwondo, and I was really in very good shape. Even back in those days, I had Fabio hair. Now I have none. Now I have Telly Savalas hair. So I was really excited about it. And then one day, a buddy of mine called me up. He said, hey, can you help me unload my van? And I went out to his house, and he had a van full of 80-pound boxes of clay. And for me, I in my mind, because of what I was doing, I thought of it as another workout. I wanted to just get more exercise. So I was like, great. Sure. So climbed up in that van, picked up the first 80-pound box of clay, lifted it, turned to set it outside of the van, and my upper body separated from my lower body, and I collapsed and was paralyzed. Wow. And they hauled me to the hospital. Doctor says, Mr. Davis, you have a condition known as spina bifida occulta, to which I promptly said Gesundheit, because I had no idea what he was talking about. He says, you have three vertebrae right above your pelvis that never formed properly at birth, and when you twisted today with that extra weight, you literally separated the upper part of your spine from the lower part of your spine and pinched off your spinal column. So I ended up lying in a hospital bed. Now I'm lying in a hospital bed, and the doctor tells me flat out, you'll never be a stuntman, you'll never be a fight director, you'll never have a physical career at all. You're going to need to start looking into sedentary lifestyle for the rest of your life because your back is not strong enough to do any of it. They also wanted to fuse my back with pins to hold it together. And I knew in my mind that if they fused my back, that was the death knell for being a stuntman or a fight director, because that means that part of your back is rigid and the other part is flexible, which means that's the part that's going to break because literally without that flexibility, you're going to hurt yourself. So I'm lying in a hospital bed and somebody came and gave me a gift that was when you look at it on the outside, you could think this person was being extremely cruel, but it was the greatest thing that could have ever happened. He gave me a book called The Tao of Jeet Kune Do by Bruce Lee, right? Oh. Right? One of the most physical guys in the world.
Yes.
But he knew me and he knew how I thought. And this book is interesting on a couple levels. One, Bruce Lee wrote this book when he was in the hospital in traction and had just been told he would never do martial arts again.
Okay.
And so this book is not – everybody says it's a martial arts book. It's a martial arts philosophy book. It's literally about his philosophy of martial arts. And one of the things that was in there that I connected to very clearly was mental flexibility. You know, you have to stay in the present moment, work in your present moment, and remain flexible no matter what's happening. You know, hold your goal and stay flexible with any adversity. So I started taking that day and I started going through this process of, okay – instead of getting worried about what's going to happen and being focused on this negative outcome, I'm going to stay right here and I'm going to make positive outcomes right here. So I started flexing my upper back muscles because I had control of my upper back muscles. And the more I started working my upper back muscles, I was able to slowly flex lower back muscles. And then one day I was able to flex hip muscles, which was impossible for what they had told me. And then next thing you know, I was bending my knees, and then I was moving my ankles and my toes. And this is now just over a month later. It took me just over a month to get to where I can move them. Mm-hmm. And then within the next month, I was sitting up on the side of the bed. By the end of a year, I was what I would consider back to being a normal human without all the buff martial arty guy, you know, just a normal. At a year and 6 months, I was standing on top of a 3-story tower looking down. And I jumped off. And
that's amazing.
And after that, I did over 4,000 live comedy sword fighting shows all over the world, including the front lines of Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's amazing. You know, sometimes I think, like, when people said something negative to me, like, you can't do this, most of the time I found it as inspiration, right. But sometimes it really got me down and, kind of set me back for a couple of years. Cause I thought, well, they know what they're talking about. Did you ever think to like go back to that doctor and say, you're completely full of shit?
I live my life by there are several quotes in my life that I go back to in those moments. And when Robin Williams was asked if he would ever do a Mork and Mindy reunion again, his response was, "You don't look backwards if you're trying to go forward, or you'll just walk into a tree." Right? So I don't look backwards. I don't really care what that doctor's doing, because the interesting thing was your life is what you choose it to be and what you create into your experience, but you can let somebody else choose for you. And at that point you're living their life and not your own. And so I choose whatever I'm going to do, no matter what anybody says. And eventually what happened was I created this thing called the 5 F's of achievement. Mm-hmm. And they're fascinating because they started with exactly what I just told you. And they build upon this concept of hacking the fight or flight response so that you can achieve more and go forward and really, break through adversity and change create peak performances, really.
Okay. So we'll talk about that. Why do you call yourself a corporate action hero?
Okay. So here I am, the guy who wears tights and lives in the woods and does sword fighting shows. And right. I just decided I wanted to go off and become a corporate speaker. And here's how that happened. With all that adversity we just talked about that had been in my life, I had gone off and I had successfully done amazing things. And when I say amazing things, I mean, I've been in the pyramids of Giza. I've been on top of Machu Picchu, swam in the blue lagoons of Iceland. I've been to 30 countries around the world and done amazing things. I worked with Brad Pitt, David Duchovny, and like a lot of really cool stuff, right? All of that happened because of these things that I had learned. But what I discovered towards the end of my comedy sword fighting career was I was enjoying the time after the show more than I was the show itself. Because after the show, I would find myself sitting in the audience with these amazing people who were having struggles in their life. And I was able to talk them through the process using my 5 F's. And I was able to take them to that next level of achievement, right? And I can't tell you how many people who still write me today tell me how I saved their marriages and all kinds of different things. And so I decided that what I wanted to do was I wanted to create a lifestyle where I could do all the fun, crazy stuff that I like to do, like bullwhips and nunchucks and all that. But I also wanted to be able to help people. So I created the Corporate Action Hero so that I could go into companies and become a keynote speaker. And the word action means to create motion, start momentum, or to do something. And the word hero is someone who achieves an extraordinary result in service of others. And so I wanted to do something to create extraordinary results for somebody else. So I'm working for corporations. I'm going in there and I'm helping them. So Corporate Action Hero was the logical progression out of that. And one of the things that I do in my corporate speeches, I will actually take the most timid person I can find in my audience. I will bring them to the stage. In under 5 minutes, they will learn to crack a whip and take targets out of my hand by using my 5F system. Under 5 minutes, they go from never having done something, being afraid of being in front of their peers, but also hitting a target out of my hand.
Jeez. So how do you do that? I mean, get a timid person to, like, I don't want to crack a whip at you.
I'm so glad you asked that question.
And throw me back into the crowd.
Well, what's interesting is that person, because they're a timid person, they have a life-changing experience. It changes their entire life.
Oh yeah.
The people in the audience who see that timid person, they all know that's a timid person. And so they're like, oh my God, I can't believe they did it, right? So that's huge. How do you do it? So let me tell you about the 5F system. The first of the 5 F's is fearlessness. Now, most people have a hard time with that because they don't understand what fear really is, because they're in fear. The first thing you have to do if you get into a fear response is label it, so that once you label it, it's now external. Because when you're sitting inside of it, you don't have a chance to control it. So first, label it as fear. Okay, I'm afraid. I have a fear. Now, fear, most people don't know what fear is. And when I ask my audiences all over the world what fear is, they go most of the time, they go dead silent. And then somebody in the back of the room will go, false evidence appearing real. Right. You hear that all the time, right? I don't buy it. I think it's a bad example, because fear, when you break it down scientifically, is an emotional reaction to some future event that may or may not happen, with you focused on a negative outcome. It literally is negatively focused on certainty. Because if you weren't focused on a negative outcome, you were focused on a positive one, you wouldn't be afraid of it, right? So your fear is just negatively focused on certainty. Now, how do you break through fear? The first thing you do, first of all, I said, is label it. The second thing you do is control your breath. Most people think when they think they get afraid, they literally say, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Well, So Luke, have you ever watched National Geographic shows on TV?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Remember that one episode with that gazelle? You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's always the same gazelle. It's sitting in the field. It's munching grass. It's crunch, 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 crunch. And then the tiger shows up, right? And the first thing the gazelle does is go and gasp for air.
Right.
And the reason why it gasps for air is because the primal response says, fill your lungs so you can run further and faster. Now, are you a parent, Luke?
Yes.
Okay.
Two daughters.
You have two daughters. So are they there when they were young? Are they still young?
10 and 16. So, yeah.
Okay. So when they were even younger, say five, and you saw them almost fall down a flight of stairs or almost fall, didn't you go,
Yeah.
right.
To this day.
So that is the natural primal response, just like the gazelle, right?
Right.
So your body starts holding air in. So when you don't feel like you can breathe because you're afraid, it's not because you don't have air. It's because your body's holding air in. Actors in Hollywood, actors on stage, are trained that if they forget their lines on stage, break the fear response by exhaling. You exhale and relax all your muscles, and it shuts off the response, and your brain kicks back in, and all the lines rush back into their head. So that's the first thing you have to do. You have to label it, and then you have to relax. Let yourself relax, right? Because fear is not rooted in your present moment. It's in a future moment, and it's a future uncertainty. So that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, when I was on the front lines talking to the soldiers, I said, how can you go into these battles knowing you're going to get shot at? And he says, well, the first thing we have to do is set our fear aside. But that's easy for us because we have an objective. We have a goal, something to focus on. Now, I can tell you from experience, when you're standing on top of a three-story tower looking down at a pad, you're not focused on how you're going to fall. You're not focused on the tower itself. You are focused on where you're going to land, right?
Right.
You're like, I want to go there, right? So you got to get focused, seriously focused. But the tough part about focus is that some people will literally sit in their present moment and focus on negative things. Do you know a negative person?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A couple, at least.
Have you ever noticed that they always have something to be negative about?
Yeah.
So here's why.
Yeah.
Let me tell you exactly why. And I'm going to give you an example, first of all. Luke, did you ever buy a car?
Yeah. Okay. Several cars, yeah.
Did you choose what kind of car you wanted before you went to the store to buy it?
Most times.
So once you made that conscious choice, did you notice you started seeing that kind of car everywhere?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So the way your brain works, and this is all part of my later studies. I got into neurolinguistics and hypnosis and everything. We have conscious moment, and there's only one moment that you can think, do, and say everything. And that's the conscious moment that you're in, the present moment. Your past is just a collection of present moment memories, but this past, there's two levels to this. One of them is the undercurrent, underlying subconscious belief from those experiences. But there's also this thing that directly connects to your present moment. When you consciously choose something in your present moment, your subconscious mind will start to show it to you. The reason you started seeing that car is because you focused on that car, and that subconscious mind started showing you the car, right? Mm-hmm. Negative people, when they're focused on negative things, their subconscious mind shows them negative things. So when I was lying in the hospital bed, I could not focus on what that doctor said. I had to focus on the fact that I was a stuntman and a fight director, the positive outcome that I was going to get. So I had to let go of that. Here's the cool part. Once you start focusing positively, the underlying subconscious belief starts to have new present moments that are positive stacked in there. And it becomes this exponential growth, because now your subconscious belief believes you're successful as well. And your conscious mind is now saying this, and it's tapping into this subconscious belief, and now it becomes this huge growth pattern, right? Mm-hmm. The tough part is we sit in our present moment. We get focused on this giant goal out here of what we want to achieve, and we feel like we have to get to it or struggle to get to it. But that's, mm-hmm. as I just said, that's not how the brain works. The way the brain works is you do present moment things. That future that you're looking at is a place where you set goals for future present moments. Because you can't go to the store next Thursday right now. And you can't go to the store last Thursday right now, right? So you set that goal for a future present moment. And then you stay right here in the present and you do successful, small, present moment things that are in alignment with it. And that big, giant success is coming to you and it's going to surround you in your present moment experience. When you experience that success, it's going to be in your present moment. So stay here and make your present moment as successful as that outcome is going to be. So you don't have to worry about the giant thing. You have to worry about the little things. And you don't even have to worry about it. Right. Yeah, just big, successful present moments. We've got fearlessly focused. You want to ask any questions on those two?
Yeah. So how do we focus on positive things in the present moment?
Yeah.
I find like a lot of times negative thoughts seem to be involuntarily coming in.
Right.
And I want to focus on positive things, but how do you do that when, you know, you've got a habit, like a lot of people when they're first learning this stuff, they've had a lifetime habit of focusing on the negative. We need to change that.
Right.
How do you change it?
Well, first of all, realize that no successful outcome has ever happened without change. So change mm-hmm. is nothing to be feared. It's something to be excited about. I'm going to change. Yeah. I'm going to do something new, right? Number two, you need to start really taking stock of your present moment words, because as I said, you only live in one moment, the present moment. Your past is just memories. Your future is just goal setting place. Only this mm-hmm. moment is where you're living. So whatever you're saying about your present moment is what your subconscious mind is going to show you. So start looking at your I am statements, not your I will be statements or I was statements. Right. I am here. I am now. I am doing, right? Buddha says what you think you become, you create your world. Krishna said you are the culmination of your thought. Gandhi said you must be the change you want to see in the world. And Jesus said, whatever you ask in God's name is granted. But Moses said that God's name was I am. So whatever you're putting after I am is what you're asking for. So when you look at this experience of your life, that focuses. Now, here's the cool part. If you're only living in the successful present moment, what happens is negative thoughts are going to come in because your subconscious mind is still having these memories.
Right.
So do a successful moment. And when one doesn't go the way you think it's going to go or a negative thought comes in, first of all, catch it and label it as a negative thought or a fear, and then go, instead of going, I'm so dumb, and smacking the top of your head, that's why I went bald, actually, just smacking the hair off the top of my head. Instead of doing that, what you want to do is you want to say, that's just silly, because that's not what I am, and that's not what I'm doing, and that's not where I'm going. Start taking the negatives and turning them into silly. If you mm-hmm. do that, what happens is you're now stacking more successful present moments, because even silly moments are positive, right? Mm-hmm. So now you just start stacking those present moments and realize that everyone's going to mess up sometimes, and that's okay. You're allowed to be fallible. Give yourself permission mm-hmm. to be fallible. Just don't get lost in your fallibility, right? If you get lost in the fallibility, then you're creating the Groundhog Day scenario where you're going to live the same over and over again. And like I said, get yourself – my good friend Dan Thurman, he's used to be the president of the National Speakers Association. He wrote an amazing book called Off Balance on Purpose. And it literally is talking about being in your circumstance and putting yourself out of balance, because that's the way you create momentum forward, is putting yourself out of the comfort. Get out, or as I would say it, get out of the velvet cage. You can sit in your velvet cage and be very comfortable in your junk. Or you can open a door and fly. And so, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to sit in the velvet cage and be comfortable in your junk? Or are you going to fly to somewhere else and live free? So that's how I would do it. I would literally say, when something comes up in your mind. Now, I'm a meditator. I meditate every day. And I'm going to use this as sort of an analogy to what you just asked.
Okay.
Most people in the world don't think they can meditate. They literally don't think they can meditate because they sit down and they try to blank their mind, right? And then those thoughts pop into their head from their subconscious mind, right?
Yes.
You know, oh my God, did I pay the bills? Oh my God, is the stove turned off? You know? And then after four or five times of that happening, they give up on meditation and they say they can't. They choose not to do it. And as Henry Ford said, whether you say you can or you can't, you're right. Right.
Right.
So
I got to check. I feel like a compulsive need to check my phone constantly.
Do you really?
I'm like, there's got to be a text there that I forgot to answer.
Right.
Those kind of crazy thoughts. So,
can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
So are you afraid that you're not going to live up to somebody else's expectation if you don't answer that call?
Yeah, for sure. I think I figured out where that came from. My dad would get really mad if I wasn't punctual. You know, if I forgot something, he's like, how could you forget?
Right.
And, you know, I kind of laugh about it now, but when I was little, you know, it was kind of terrorizing. It was like, I can't forget. I can't forget,
right.
You know, miss a meeting with the bank when I'm going for a loan or something, you know, and I never miss appointments or forget anything, but I've still got this kind of thing
right.
that goes, geez, did I forget? I got to double, triple check, you know?
Right. I had an alcoholic and an abusive father. And of the seven kids, we were Catholic, of the seven kids that they had, I was the one he hated. And I was the one who was, you know, really emotionally abused for a lot of my life. And I had an experience where at some point I had to give that up. But the interesting thing is those limiting beliefs will tap into your core self-esteem, your core strength, you know, that your self-doubt is fostered by what your parents and your friends or quote unquote friends would tell you. Right. And so that's great because what that does is it tells me, takes us right into the third F. We got fearlessly focused so far. Right.
Yeah.
The third one is faith, confidence, belief in yourself. You have to believe you're gonna get the thing that you set. And if you don't believe you're gonna get it, then what's gonna happen is you're not gonna get it because your lack of belief means that you don't have faith in it, right? And if you in your present moment are thinking, I don't have faith in it, then you're not gonna get it. You're not gonna create it. And so you need to stay right here and go, I am gonna get it. My son, like I said, he's 17 now, but back when he was six, he had a Nerf crossbow, and we used to shoot these Nerf crossbows. Well, anybody who has a Nerf crossbow knows the Nerf crossbow is the most accurate Nerf weapon that has ever been built. You can hit any target you want, right? And my son, at 6 years old, could hit every target. And we had a game we used to play where one of us would sit on the couch in the living room, shoot across the living room, through the kitchen door, hit the side of the stainless steel trash can in the kitchen. And you know, he could hit it every time. You know, I could hit it every time. So we decided we had to make the game even harder. So whoever wasn't shooting, whoever wasn't shooting would stand halfway between the kitchen and the couch, holding two Nerf swords, flailing them wildly up and down, trying to stop the thing from getting through. Well, my son would get up there, and being the best father I could be, wanting my six-year-old to have a positive win, I would get up there and I would flail all around, but I'd leave the whole center open. And he would ping, he'd hit it every time. Then I would get up there and I'd shoot him in the ceiling and the floor and anything else but the trash can. About the fourth or fifth time, he starts laughing. And he says, Dad, I know why you miss. And I said, oh, crap, I've been caught. I go, why, Kynan? Why do you think I miss? He says, because you don't believe you're going to hit it. Now, I was like, there's my little Yoda right there, right? Do or do not. There is no try. He was telling me flat out, you have to believe it. You have to have, you know, when you look at the five Fs, the middle one, the one that is the pillar of the other four that surround it is your faith, your belief in the outcome. And I don't mean spiritual faith. And if that's where you get your faith, that's great. But I'm talking about confidence, real belief that you can do it, self-confidence. So fearlessly focus with faith. The next one's the hard one. It's the hardest of all of them. It's follow through. You actually have to do something. You actually have to get off the couch and do something. For me, lying in that hospital bed all those years ago, I had to say, okay, today I'm flexing my back muscles. And that's what I did for that day. You know, you actually have to do something. Problem is, when you're in your present moment, you're trying to achieve something and you're trying to do something, you have to look at it from the perspective of, if I'm not doing something, what am I afraid of? What's stopping me from getting up and taking an action? You know, what is it that's holding me? And go and label that fear and release it. You know, exhale, go, I identify it. A lot of achievement in life is all about retrospection and looking at, you know, figuring out what it is that gave you the beliefs that you have. You know, my father had a hard life and struggled for money his entire life. Well, his parents went through the Great Depression. So they had a huge lack mentality they handed down to him. And then he handed it down to everybody else in the family, right? And once I broke that, my money came, right? So it was like really a whole different experience. So, you know, you need to make sure that these small steps that you're doing, which are, by the way, the small successful present moments that you're creating, are being locked here. Tough part is people sit in their present moment and they use non-creative words, which means they won't take an action. So I say, people say, I am wanting, I am needing, I am hoping, I am trying. I say, well, cut that out. That feels terrible, right? I am creating, I am enjoying, I am living. Those are very different from wanting, needing, hoping, and trying. So that's fearlessly focused with faith and follow through. So that's where we are right now. There's one more, but do you have any questions on that?
No, that's really fantastic.
Okay, that's so really let's go to the last one then, just so we can get it out of the way. The last one is kind of where we started this whole conversation, and it's flexibility. You know, when I was lying in that bed and that guy gave me that book, it was about mental flexibility that started me out in that process. You know, when something comes up that seems contrary to what you're trying to achieve, you can say, I'm done. I'm stopped. Oh, well, it's over. Or you can say, okay, this came up so that I can deal with it, resolve it, get rid of it to get to my goal, right? You can look at this thing. Bruce Lee used to say, be like water. Water flexes and flushes and goes around and crashes through rock even. But you have to make sure that you keep that mindset. Your goal is going to happen, right? And we've talked about the subconscious mind. If you've consciously set a goal for something and something comes up because your subconscious mind saying you got to deal with this to get that. It's not saying you're not going to get it. It says, no, you got to deal with this to get to that. And sometimes dealing with that makes the outcome even better. So, so that mental flexibility is really important. Pardon? Yeah,
it can actually be fun to overcome certain obstacles, especially when you achieve it.
Yeah, when you get done, you're like, woohoo, I did it. Yeah. I'll tell you what, when I jumped off that tower, I wasn't screaming fear. I was, yahoo, and jumping off a tower, right? I was having a great time because I was celebrating all the present moments that I had done before. And that present moment of suddenly being able to jump and feel that in my life. And I went on. I got my black belt. I did over 4,000 live comedy sword fighting shows all over the world. And, you know, those things only there's some things that aren't in my bio. I became a college professor for Oberlin College. There's a whole bunch of things in there. But it doesn't matter what I did. It only matters what you do. It only matters what you do with your life, because your life is – today's choices are tomorrow's outcomes. And you can choose today to do great things, or you can choose today to stop and get stuck.
Yep. So true. I've got one more thing I wanted to ask you about, because I know you talk about dealing with negative people. So for me, once I became a more positive person, this kind of takes care of itself for the most part. So negative people just don't really like being around me. And I attract positive people to myself, which takes up time and takes up space. So that's a really good thing. But sometimes there's someone in your family or someone in your corporation that is just kind of a negative person. You kind of have to deal with them a little bit.
Right.
How do you deal with those people?
Well, first of all, realize that if they're a negative person, you're not the only one who knows it. Right.
Right. That's true.
Right. And so you have to realize that you stay positive no matter what they say. Now, I look at the way I look at life now and the way I look at people now is very different, because these five F's that I talk about, are literally the primal fight or flight response. I know that everybody that I'm dealing with is going through the same process. So I know that they have this primal reaction, and negative people are just deeper in the fear side of it. So I can look at them and I can start looking at their experience from their point of view, very empathetically. So I look, like, for instance, when I bring that person to the stage to crack that target out of my hand, they're the most timid person in the room. The first thing they step on stage, their biggest fear is being in front of their peers, right? Mm-hmm. And that can be turned very negative very quick, right?
Yes.
So the way I had to deal with it was I had to go, as they come to the stage, I said, isn't she a rock star for coming up here? And I start throwing positive reinforcement at them. You know, every time they do something good, throw a positive reinforcement at them. Her stepping on stage was something good, right? So it automatically did that. When we started talking about cracking the whip, we didn't. We actually did not talk about cracking the whip. I started talking about fishing. And so I didn't want to trigger her into a fear response. So I said, have you ever been fishing? And she goes, yeah. I go, have you ever cast a fishing rod? And they go, you know, yes or no, doesn't matter. Well, today I'd like to show you the real way to cast a fishing rod, right? And they go, she says, okay, you know, there's no threat there. Fishing rods aren't dangerous, right?
Right.
And then I pull out a bullwhip and the audience laughs. And I look at her and I say, it's a fishing rod. Just think fishing. And I hand her a whip. And she's standing there. I said, now, and I got her and she's like, you know, now she's got a little nerves on her. So while she's in this fear state of holding a whip in her hand, my job is to knock the fear down. So I turn to the section of the audience that she's sitting in and I say, you people over here, I need you to take both your hands, stick them under your chin, and then do a guppy mouth and do this real guppy thing. I said, there's your fish, right? And that makes her laugh. It knocks her out of her fear. I said, now your job is to decide which one of those fish you hate the most, right? And which gets a laugh, right? And then now we're laughing, we're joking, we're having a good time. And I said, let me, all I want you to do is just let the fishing rod come all the way behind you and flick your wrist towards the fish that you want to go towards. Because it's the same motion as cracking a whip. It's exactly the same thing. So she goes up, pow, and she cracks the whip, like almost right away. I can usually get her to crack it in the first one or two times. Because now she's not thinking about, see, when you pull out a whip, people have preconceived notions. They have pain, danger, and some think Frisky Friday night. Right? right. And I don't want them thinking.
Not usually fishing.
Right.
Usually thinking about fishing, yeah.
Right. And I don't want them thinking about those pain, danger, or that other thing. And so I want them thinking about calm, serene fishing. So now she cracks the whip. So now the next thing I said that I would have her do was take a target out of my hand, right? So I turn to the audience and I say, we need to throw a little bit of adversity her way because now she's got the skill. So I've already started consciously reinforcing that she's got the skill.
Yeah.
Right. And then I grab the target, I bring it out, and I automatically see her drop into her fear. Now, empathetically, I know her fear is hitting me. I know that's what she's afraid of, hitting me. Right. So I'm like, okay. I look at her. I said, look at me. Did you hear it crack? And she goes, yeah. I said, so you already know how to make it crack. So you already know how to make a crack. And I keep talking to her and I make sure I say, you already know how to make a crack three times, right? What's that? Yes. What that's doing is that is subconsciously changing her belief from learning a skill to knowledge of the skill. So I'm literally altering her mindset about where she is on the learning curve. And then I say, look at me. And she looks me square in the eye and I say, I promise you're not going to hurt me.
Right.
Because I know that's her fear. I know that's her biggest fear. Sometimes when you're leading people through stressful situations, you got to lie to them. I'm kidding. Right? you have to realize if you're leading somebody, or especially if they're a negative person, you can't, they're never going to be where you want them to be. You got to go to where they are and bring them to where you want them to be.
That's a great point. So
you got to go to where they are and bring them to where you want them to be. So to me, her fear was hitting me. So I had to go to where she was and say, I promise you're not going to hurt me. And I promise. And I'm giving her, you notice my, if you were watching video of this, you would notice that my head is nodding up and down. I'm giving positive reinforcement. My father, you know, the one good quote I got out of my father his entire life was, One oh shit wipes out 1,000 attaboys. Right? Right?
Right.
But you gotta give the attaboys, the 1,000 attaboys, for that one oh shit to be powerful. Now yeah. You gotta give the positive reinforcement is the important part. So what happens next is I say, all I want you to do, now that you know how to crack the whip, all I want you to do is focus right here and cast your fishing rod. Mm-hmm. And they will usually hit the target out of my hand in the first one or two shots. Because the thing that's messing up their mindset is their fear. It's their self-doubt, their self-worth issues. Yeah. By taking all that away, we become really massive conscious creators into our life. We really start come to this place where we're creating our outcomes in record time. And this, I mean, I just got off stage. I was on the Opryland Resort stage on Friday, performing. And the woman on stage, she did it in 4 minutes.
Wow.
She went from never having touched a whip to taking targets out of my hand in 4 minutes.
And that's a great experience that she's not going to forget.
She was like, her eyes went wide. You know, even in COVID-19, she grabbed me and hugged me. You know, she was like, she got so excited about that I talked to her afterwards. She says, I never thought I could do anything like that. I said, see, you can do anything, because that's the point, is you can do anything. And all you got to do is manage your fears.
That's wonderful. Okay. Last question, John.
Okay.
What is the difference between an action hero and a superhero?
Okay. So we've touched on it
at the start. Yeah.
We talked a lot about the action hero and, you know, achieving extraordinary results for others. So the difference really is action heroes are ordinary individuals who are creating extraordinary results in service of others. Anybody can be an action hero.
Yeah.
Superheroes wear their underwear on the outside of their pants, who are irradiated by some sort of goo and usually have superpowers. And being that they're superheroes, if they do super things, they're really super slackers, because if they're only doing super things, they're not really out of their box. So it's much better to be an action hero, an ordinary individual who creates extraordinary results in service of others, than being some guy who's got really bad fashion sense.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Totally. So do people have to go to Akron to see you, or do you have some things online?
Easiest way to find me is corporateactionhero.com. And you're going to find my LinkedIn. You're going to find my Facebook. You're going to find all those things. And on that page, there's a daily vlog. I put out a motivational video every day, a short one. So if you just want some daily motivation, you can find it there. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel like you want to go there, go to YouTube. You'll find them there too. There's video on that page. There's all kinds of things. But I want to give your audience a free gift today.
Okay.
If I can. I want to clarify. I just said the word free. And free means I get nothing, which means when you go to this link that Luke will share with you, this link will take you to a place to download my 5F workbook. This helps you go through your process of the 5Fs, achieving more. You don't have to even give me an email address. It's just a place to go download it. But here's the only thing I'll ask you. You're going to be on my site anyway. Just look around. Take a look. See if you find anything. Find anything interesting. You know, if you don't stick around, that's fine too. But the 5F workbook. If I could do anything in my life, I want these 5Fs to get out there, because I have watched how they have changed lives all over the place. And so this is a free gift that I hope you'll actually take advantage of.
That's fair. That's totally fair. And I really appreciate that, John. I can talk to you for hours. You're a fascinating person that's had an amazing life.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a Newtown Big Dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.